This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So the only thing left to say is, you in? Order now on the McDonald's app. You can also get reward points delivered too. So the ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus. Rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Back of the Nest preview show. Sponsored by Pitch Sport. Available to download on the App Store and Google Play. PitchDMM.com.
Welcome one and all to the Back of the Nest preview podcast, and more importantly, the Back of the Nest match report for Brighton versus Two Touch Crystal Palace. I'm your host, Terence Ford, and I have a panel member for every shot we had at the Amex, in Hambo, Eskiff and Albert. Oh, how we've laughed. Let's get into it.
Of the Nest, sponsored by Pitch Sport. PitchDMM.com.
Yes, after a preview pod last week full of the joys of spring about how Brighton were going to run us over. I mean, I guess they kind of did, but hey ho, it didn't quite work out how it was meant to for them. So let me introduce you to my panel. I've got Hambo joining to do yet another match report on the preview pod.
Indeed. Very excited to be here, especially with you three, big fans of you all. And, you know, to celebrate that joy of joining you with a Brighton, a win against Brighton, if you can imagine it. And a very funny one at that. In fact, my most popular ever tweet was the one I put the least amount of effort into, just saying that was honestly one of the funniest things that I've ever seen. I've put so much other effort into other tweets and get like two likes. And this one's got about 260 odd. So there you go. Mm.
Congratulations.
Thanks, man.
Yeah, saved your dying Twitter account.
Exactly, yeah.
Sam Hesketh, welcome.
Hello.
We can see each other on video these days when we record these podcasts, and Sam looks like he's in a dungeon, which is weird because I know it's at least one level up from, or two levels up from a dungeon. So,
yeah, it's definitely not a dungeon. It's a bare wall. If I turn the camera around and you see like the manacles and chains, that's a different story. But
and Albert, you're the back of your room looks like, I don't know, a struggling writer who once upon a time is successful.
Thanks. I don't really know what to do with that.
3 weeks in a row for you. It's a hat trick.
Thank you very much. Do I get some sort of prize?
No, but you do get to have a beer check now and drink some booze.
Damn, I'm thirsty. I want a beer. What about you? You want a beer? I'm going to leave you three to it, man.
Yeah, this week I'm going to say let's smash and grab a beer, baby, if you know what I mean. And that's referring to the wonderful video, Hesketh, of Joel Ward. Well, pretty much in the background of every video that was going on Palace TV.
Yeah, I think as much as we all loved it, Wardy, being the longest serving player that he is, was definitely feeling it as well, wasn't he?
Yeah, what was it? That's the way, I like it. I'm still on finishing off the Tiny Rebels this week, so I'm finishing off my Club Tropica. And we were, like, you know, we got more sponsored beer checks coming, but we weren't going to waste one on a show where Hambo was here because he doesn't drink beer. So sorry, Hambo.
Thanks for reminding me,
Albert. You've got a Budweiser and
no
suggestions of some gin.
No, I've had a couple of gins already. I've got something unfortunate has happened here. I've got a Pacifico, which is a fine Mexican lager, which is what I was meant to have a few weeks ago when Desperados arrived in the shop. But unfortunately, just before going on air, I put on some chapstick that turned out to be strawberry flavoured, and now I can taste that when I drink the beer, and it's kind of turned into the sort of thing that you probably like, Terence. So I've got a real mixed palate at the moment.
Just a hint of cherry chapstick.
It's a fine, crisp Mexican cerveza with a sort of strawberry bubblegum tinge, and it's not pleasant.
Many years ago, I had this is going to sound ridiculous, a friend who was on Babe Station, and she always had cherry chapsticks with her, but they'd contain these sort of almost like poison to make your lips swell up to look like they were fuller than they were. So it was always a trick to go around the pub and put it on people and then all of a sudden get an allergic reaction in their lips.
But I have to ask. I have to ask.
Please don't.
She was putting them on her face, yeah?
Wow.
Oh, I said please.
Oh. Yes, obviously.
I just wanted to clear that up because I'm sure there was people at home that needed that clarifying.
Mm.
I had a mate who's a cameraman on Babe Station. We've probably got mutual friends. Seriously.
This podcast is sponsored by Babe Station.
What do we get in the post when that sponsorship deal comes off? What's that going to be like? We're going to be sat here with some scantily clad strawberry-lipped lady behind us dancing.
That's the dream, mate. That is the dream.
Call me now. Well, talking of beautiful bastards, Hambo, Joel Ward. Unbeaten against Brighton in 8 games, 5 wins and 3 draws. All of those losses that we like to forget, for some reason or whatever, Joel Ward's not been involved. Lucky charm.
Yeah, I saw that statistic come up after the game. And first of all, I was surprised because you kind of think, I mean, actually, our record against Brighton is pretty strong, let's face it. You know, certainly since we started playing them again, you know, starting with that wonderful 5-0 and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, I was definitely surprised, but it was a welcome reminder, really, wasn't it, about just what a great player Wardy has been for us, and as we've been talking about, how much it clearly means to him as well. And I don't think it's a coincidence. I don't think it's one of those statistics that you can point out and just say it's a bit of a quirk. I think, the players who perform the best for Palace in these games are always the players who have that proper connection and really get it. I know Wilf's talked about it a lot, hasn't he? And, you just know that Wardy's one of those players who it just means so much more to him than perhaps some of the others.
Yeah, he was definitely throwing his weight around a bit in that game, which I'm sure we'll get into. Another player, the man of the moment, this one.
Benteke. Thank you very much. Have a good day. Bye.
He's joined Mane, Cisse and former Palace, I was going to say legend, but not for everyone, Ian Wright, as scoring... that was his fourth 90th minute winner or later in the Premier League era, which means he's number one on that list with those three players. Albert, can you remember the other one? He scored one for Palace. The other two were for Villa, I assume.
Oh, a last minute winner.
Yep. Big booming header.
Was it Everton?
No, he did score a big booming header. Well, that wasn't a booming header. That was a curling header somehow.
Yeah.
But no, look, Hesketh's frantically waving around.
I know the answer. I can even tell you who got an assist in that game.
Big man Seki Fryers.
Big man Seki Fryers. Sunderland away.
Wow.
Yeah. Come back from 2-0 down to win 3-2. Unsurprisingly, I think Jermaine Defoe probably scored both of the goals in that game for Sunderland, didn't he? Mm-hmm. Blimey. But yeah, I mean, that's a pretty good record to have to, score 4 90th minute winners is pretty special. One's enough usually for a player to, go down in folklore and stuff like that. But yeah, I just can't get over it. I just still cannot get over it. Well, we're going to get more into the game, but yeah, let's move on. Interesting stat that came out of this, guys. And Heskey, if you can field it, because you can probably remember the last time it happened.
Oh, God.
First time two recognised strikers have scored for Palace in the same game. Now, I did have someone pulling me up on Twitter saying, oh, well, you're discounting Zaha. I'm saying, Zaha's not a recognised striker, but yes, obviously discounting Zaha.
Is Benteke?
Not allowed to strike him up on the show.
Yeah, a formerly recognised striker.
Yeah.
No. So the last time two recognised strikers scored in the same game, Heskey, and it was a very special day for you.
It was a very special day for me. It was a day that Wilfred... I'm sorry, it was my wedding day. yeah, it was three all the way to Hull.
Yeah, and who was the other striker?
Fraser Campbell.
He was. Late, wasn't it? Another, there. It was,
I think I mentioned this before, but I'm not allowed to say Fraser Campbell saved my wedding day.
He definitely didn't save your wedding day. No, not at all. what else we got? So, in the aftermath of the game, WhatsApp just went wild. In various Crystal Palace groups I'm in on WhatsApp just went crazy. And two of my favourites were voice notes from two people on this pod. So first, we just got this from Hambo. just laughing away there, Hambo.
Yeah, it was. I mean, I didn't know how else to react to that because, you know, we'll talk about it. But it was genuinely hilarious, wasn't it? It was. You know, I want to use the iconic words that were said prior to the goal later on, so I won't say them now. But the whole thing, the how it came together, the pressure that was there. You know, we had no business even being level in that game at the time, and then to go up pretty much last kick of the game. And for Benteke to score the way he did, all I could do was laugh. It, and I still haven't really stopped laughing inside. It was a real tonic to the kind of spirits at the moment. And that was
That's a nice way of putting it. It absolutely has been a real tonic to it because I think Roy might have just saved his job in that game, to be honest. But Heskey, the next one's from you, a little bit more guttural. It went something like this.
Yeah.
How did your dog handle that one?
Yeah, he wasn't a fan. I did say, as I was, funnily enough, I was talking to someone who supports Palace at my work, and we were talking about the game, and I said that the noise that I made after both Mateta's goal and Benteke's were not human. Like, I couldn't recreate the noise that came out of my mouth when those goals went in. So the voice grab to the voice clip to you guys of me just screaming was like quite settled. Considering
a little bit more stage, we'll play it in a little bit, but when you get, we've got DR and Nick's reaction to the goal from the watch along, and it's it captured a lot of people's like attention on Twitter and stuff like that, and people are just like, you know, it's beautiful because it is the absolute ridiculousness of captured of how we celebrate goals and stuff like that, and especially in such a big game. And what was nice, it felt like a big game as well in terms of in the Palace world, because lots and lots of ex-players were talking about it on Twitter. So ranging from Aki Rialati was watching along, to Yannick Bolasie, to even Antonio Pedroza, good old those Brighton wankers, Antonio Pedroza. So nice to know that he's still paying attention.
I would have recorded a voice note, but I was bundling the wife. And if I'd have recorded audio of that, you might have called the police.
Yeah, you just wrote the words, but I bundled the wife, and
she didn't mind. I pulled a hammy doing it. It's not a it's not a euphemism.
We know that you're wearing lovely cherry lip gloss as you do it. It's obviously she's not going to mind. You smell nice.
They're swelling right up. It's like when I suspected COVID.
When you look like Leslie Ash.
Yeah.
Oh, you just reminded me of that picture. That was horrifying. Oh,
me or Leslie Ash?
Yeah. No, well, no comment.
To be honest, yeah, I've never seen either of you in the same room together, so
there's no room big enough to contain lips like that.
Your missus isn't Lee Chapman, is she?
Good reference.
No, but she did go to Leeds Uni, so she might have picked up some tips.
I'm not going to go any further with that, as is your wife. Lewis Dunkgiff. Eskiff, you can
there's a great sex criminal segue you could have made there, but you chose not to.
Yeah, it's very big of you, Terence. Well done.
I'm holding it in, but not very well.
Well, that's what he was accused of. And cleared.
Cleared of it.
Eskiff, Lewis Dunkgiffs.
I mean, what a segue there. Lewis Dunkgiffs, friend and former podcast producer of the show, Billiam, made a little gif of Lewis Dunk's reaction after Benteke had scored, sort of like zoomed in from the video. And it's definitely the best gif I have ever seen. Because he's getting really angry and upset and he's having a little tantrum. So I chucked that on Twitter, and much like Hambo's, it did some good numbers. But I also had some Brighton fans replying to me saying, like, at least our captain shows passion. He's got more passion than all of you lot. And obviously I could have just replied with like gifs of Wilf celebrating against Brighton to show the passion. But I thought if I just laugh at you, that's the only response I need.
I mean, I would have been tempted to bring out the clapper picture, you know, with a guy crying into his clapper. That's my favourite for Brighton fans.
That's real passion.
Yeah.
It felt like it's been quite funny reading and watching, you know, reading North Stand chat and watching that. I think they've got a podcast called Seagull Social. And it's the same old thing. Like, I could have rewound 8 or 9 years and then talking about, don't worry, you know, we're by far the better team and it's going to come for us and we play better football, we're a project, blah, blah, blah. You were saying the same thing 8 years ago when we got promoted over you and you still haven't surpassed us now. So just because you've got XG, mate, put the ball in the back of the fucking net.
is there anything better, though, than being able to read North Stand chat after a Palace victory? It is a hobby that I have missed. Because it feels like it's been a while since we've really, you know, really had that to celebrate. And in the way that we did it, it's just beautiful. Their pain just feeds me.
There's a I went on to the page of the match day Fred at the point where the winning goal went in. And I think a couple of posts before it was someone saying, like, we're a left back and a striker away from being like a very, very good Premier League team. And then two posts later, it was just like, fuck's sake, we're shit, fuck's sake, Benteke. And it was just like meltdown for like 20 pages. It was amazing.
They got a point, though. It was the left back who, I don't know what he was doing, when the spun around in a 360 trying to follow Benteke.
And he got a bit dizzy, didn't he, by the looks of it?
If only they had a clinical striker like Benteke.
Right. Okay, I think we might as well get into it. So we'll start with a clip of DR and Nick just, shall we say, overly enjoying the goal. That I don't think you can overly enjoy that sort of goal, right? It's magical.
Yeah, it's special.
Andros, Wellington, what's going on, Andros?
Get in the goal.
Christian.
With no further ado, Hambo, take us away with the match report.
Thanks for that. How the hell do you follow that? I mean, I love how high-pitched DR gets. That's my favourite part of that. I mean, it is proper screaming. But first watch-along I've missed in a very long time, and I missed a cracker, really. But it was great to see Nick on there enjoying that with DR. And I mean, that I want to start by us talking about the goals. We usually talk about line-up and selection and leave the goals till a little bit later on. But, you know, obviously I'm desperate to talk about the winner, but Mateta's goal was something really, really special as well. Obviously, it was our first touch in the box. And, you know, I think how it came about was real quality. It's what Coyote gives you, for playing at the back, where he was able to kind of run out, not under too much pressure. And I don't think you can underestimate the quality of pass down the wing to Ayew. Ayew, who had a superb game with the work rate that he always gives you, but just really just taking on the run and being brave about it. And the analysis that that Sky did during the course of the game was really good as well, because they pointed out that Lewis Dunk very pleasingly got caught in no man's land, sort of half going out to help out Dan Byrne, but not really doing anything. But Mateta's movement and presence of mind was brilliant. It shows that there really is a very good player there. But for that to be your first Palace goal, to score against Brighton with a double nutmeg back heel, I didn't see that coming. When that ball went into the box, I thought there's nothing that he can do there. He's going to have to try and hold it up for somebody else to get back in. The movement, the spin, the finish, and then the disrespect to go and kick the corner flag like that in front of the Brighton subs. Magical. So, Terence, kick me off. Thoughts, feelings?
Well, I mean, there was probably about 5 or 6 minutes before he scored, another cross came in from that side, and I thought he had no chance of getting to it. And he came to life and nearly got there, and Lewis Dunk just got there ahead of him to clear it. And I was thinking, God, he's not the kind of striker I was expecting because of the size of him. You expect him to be back to goal, that kind of, hold it up deep, get people into play and score some headers or so. But he's not, he's explosive. He kind of wants to seem to play off the shoulder and so on. And then it comes to life in the box, which we haven't had for a while. And when the cross came in, I mean, it was brilliant work from Ayew. I mean, he drew the fullback out, spinning, running behind him and just left him for dead, basically. And that's why Dunk ended up getting sucked out. When the cross comes in, Jordan's done great work, but it's not the best of crosses. And I was just thinking, like, there's no way he can score here. Like, what's he going to do? Like, how is he going to hold it up? And as those thoughts are processing in my brain, the ball is in the back of the net. And I jumped out. I've got the kid's ball pit was in front of me. That went flying everywhere. It was balls everywhere. I'm screaming the house down while the kid's asleep, trying not supposed to be waking her up. Thankfully, the white noise machine did its job. Screaming like DR was in that clip that we've just heard. And it's just amazing. Like, there, if he goes on to become a Palace here, like, legend, scores loads of goals for us and stuff like that, to be like, to help us to say your first goal was a double nutmeg back heel at Brighton in one of the biggest smash and grabs in Premier League history. It was unbelievable. And they talked about it as well in the Sky Room when they were saying it's not just the spin and the back heel. Is holding a defender off at the same time as well. And they went on to show clip upon clip upon clip of people scoring back heels like that. And not one of them had to hold off a defender in any sort of way like Mateta did, which just shows that he's certainly got something about him.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
I'm going to give the pair of you a chance to react to that opening goal as well and tell us about, again, your reaction and really to talk a little bit about Mateta, because, there wasn't a massive contribution, but he was playing up top on his own. But to still have that presence of mind, Eskif, to basically be in the right place, acting like an instinctive striker should.
Yeah, I mean, when we saw his debut against Leeds, it was a tough game because we didn't really get the ball to him at all and sort of petered out very quickly. And the first sort of 20 minutes or so of that game, he didn't really get into it. He had a few touches, didn't really get into it. But like you say, if you can have a striker who comes alive at the right moments, and it sounds easy, but... we obviously know it's not. for him to be able to have that presence of mind to get in the area, like Terence said, uses physicality before you even think about back heeling across. It's insane. Like I said, the noise I made was like otherworldly, because I was like, it was a mix of like brilliant sort of elation, but also like, I can't believe that he's done that. And I kept
trying to try and do the noise now.
No, come on. you wait till I've been on the gin, you'll get the noise, I reckon. But that's for post-season. But yeah, look, when he scored, I just kept saying to Vanessa, I was like, I can't believe he scored that goal. I can't believe that he has scored, like a Palace player has scored a back heel double nutmeg. And I do want to give a little shout out as well to the face and noise that he made when he thought that he was going to be given offside.
Yeah.
I mean, we all shit ourselves at that point, right?
Yeah, I definitely did.
Yeah, good.
And then I think there's a bit where you see Andros come up to him being like, you're fine, you're all right, it's all good. But yeah, to finish like that is insane, but to actually come off and do it at Brighton away is unbelievable.
And Albert, I probably an unfair question to ask you considering the gin you've consumed, but I've been trying to remember whether or not I can think of certainly a Palace player ever scoring as iconic a goal like that as a debut goal, their first goal, a goal of that quality. Can we remember any other quality debut strikes? But if you can't, you can just give your reaction as well.
No, I think the closest thing that I can get to that was the Ventola goal.
Yeah,
when he'd been crocked for however long. And obviously it wasn't, I don't think it was his debut, but just to come off the bench and score a goal like that was probably the biggest, like, what the fuck moment I can remember in terms of scoring your first goal for the club and only goal for the club. I mean, you guys have covered it. It's, you know, there's nothing else I can add to how good that goal was. Completely against the run of play. We obviously don't create a lot of chances. So again, any striker that's going to, you know, add some numbers to their game has got to really latch on to the small scraps that we create currently. And what a way to do it. Yeah, I can't add anything more to it.
I've got to say, you're right. I've got to correct myself. Called it a debut goal. Obviously, it wasn't a goal on his debut. It was his first goal. It was probably slightly wrong wording me from there. But we can go straight into talking about Benteke's winner. So a second half where...
Skip out all the other nothing shit between.
Absolutely right. We did nothing in terms of contribute to any kind of real attack, did we? I don't know if it's completely fair that the commentators said it was our only attack of the half, but I am struggling to remember anything else I could really realistically call an attack.
Yeah, I think Benteke, just after he came on, he had a shot from about 25 yards.
That's right, yeah.
Well to wiggle clear, and that was our only other shot in the game. Yeah.
So again, when that came about from, of course, Brighton were pressing, but they'd seemed to have kind of run out of ideas a little bit. You know, it got less frantic from about 70 minutes on. It almost kind of started to wind down. They had all of the ball, but I think they'd started to lose a bit of confidence that they were going to get anything. And it was Ben White, wasn't it, who had a bit of a moment. Gyro closed a pass down. It hit him on the back. He turned away from it like you're told not to. But there was a big shout from Ray Lewington on the sidelines of well done, Gyro. And then the ball sort of dropped back to White. And for some reason, he just hooked it over his head, didn't he? That bit of panic trying to get the ball forward, trying to build that last minute attack. And by hooking it up in the air. And the funny thing is, it goes up and then Benteke tries to take it down, doesn't it? And he takes the worst touch possible. But we just pick up the loose ball and it goes back out to the, ends up at the, feet of Jordan Ayew. Welbeck doesn't do the tactical foul and Ayew just powers on past him. Done all that running to still have that energy and that drive to run like that. You know, he deserves a lot of plaudits. I've been really harsh on him this season because he, you know, in my view, he's been poor, but he never stops working. And then for him to push like he did, put the ball out to Townsend, and Townsend doesn't really look up, does he, when he plays the cross? You know, he sort of glances up but then just thinks, I'm just gonna take that step, whip it in with the left foot, and then Benteke is just pulled away perfectly. You know, obviously Burn is poor not really to stick with him, but to pull away at the far post. And the finish, you know, I didn't see that coming, Terence. I mean, Benteke, a confident Christian Benteke when he was, you know, banging in 15 Premier League goals. Yeah, totally. I can see that. But the Benteke we've seen for the last few seasons, absolutely not. It was just unbelievable.
Well, what it was like, both goals, was those videos that we release from training every week where the strikers are banging in every chance they get. That's what it was like. It was like one of those. It was like, oh, that's not CGI footage that we watch every week from the training ground kind of scenario. But yeah, I mean, I want to like take it way back because there's so many different like bits in that goal that you know, just when you start getting into things like, I'm not sure chaos theory is the right thing, but for everything to come together, for anything to happen in the world at any point is like a miracle, right? So you just, Benteke's touch is dreadful. Well, Ben White's hook clearance is dreadful, could go anywhere. The rebound off Jaya Riedewald could go anywhere. Benteke's terrible touch could go anywhere. James McCarthy is telling Jordan Ayew not to take the ball. He's like mine, and Jordan just brushes him aside. And halfway across the pitch, Danny Welbeck's chasing him, and you've got Graham Potter on the side saying, don't foul. Like the sheer arrogance of it. Like, you know, we don't want them to waste some time. Like, let's win the ball back and get a winner. And then if you look back, when Andros hits the cross, it bobbles up slightly in front of him. So that's why it goes where it goes, because he kind of slices it a bit, sandwiches a bit, and it does the most weirdest thing, because it looks like he's doing an away swinger, but then it sort of halfway through cuts back in the air, the ball sort of straightens a bit. And just to finish, as you say, just one of confidence that we've not really, you know, he threatened it at West Brom this season, but to finish with such aplomb so late in the game and then just take it so easy and so cool with a celebration, it's just, yeah, unbelievable. Living room limbs, as I called it.
Absolutely. And the iconic words, Heskiff, of they couldn't, could they? And they did, right?
Yeah, we did. And it's one of those lines of commentary that we're definitely going to remember forever, not necessarily in the way that we remember Wilf's because it was the playoff semi. But just, you know, the thought, because I think we were all thinking, there's no way he's scoring this, you know. I've defended Benteke on this pod up to a point, but at the time he was shaping the shoot, I was like, oh, come on. So the line of they couldn't, could they? And then we actually did, coupled with Lewis Dunk having a meltdown, is something that I have replayed on video ad nauseum.
So, and Gyro is screaming, isn't he? And I'm going to bring Albert in on this, even though he's clearly looking at his phone because we can now see each other now. On the Palace All Access stuff, which is obviously a great watch for the Brighton game, you've got Benteke at the far post and Gyro screaming for him to lay it off. Have you ever been that guy in five-a-side? And I think, Terence, you tweeted the Kaká video when he was playing five-a-side where there's a guy screaming, Kaká, play it, and he smashes it into the top corner. Have you ever been that guy in five-a-side screaming for the ball and not getting it, and someone does something like that?
No, I'm very much at the back in five-a-side.
I would have you down, Albert, as you're a bit like Dean Gordon. You've got a shot on you. So you just take every now and then you mix it up. The goalie rolls it out to you. You just have a
well, pop. As we saw in the five-a-side game against FYP, yeah, I can bang one in from my own half. Don't you worry about that. And then immediately have to go off after because I was a bit puffed out. But edit that bit out. But in my head, you've already sort of alluded to it, Terence. Like when Andros crosses that ball in, there's something weird going on with the perspective, and the ball looks like it's almost going out for a throw-in. Like it's like that's just way over Benteke's head, and then you see him sort of squaring up to like hit it. And in my head, this noise was going off. Like it was going to be a complete air swing. He was just like, the ball was going to be nowhere near him. He was going to absolutely lash at it. And all I saw his leg move, and all of a sudden the ball was in the net. It was very, very impressive. And listen, we've all been through the reactions already. But what a finish.
Yeah. No, it's just a beautiful moment. Again, we, you know, I've used the word iconic already. We're talking about Mateta's goal. That's an iconic bit of commentary, an iconic finish. And it just seems to happen so often against Brighton. It's why they're probably the best rivals you can have, because they just they give so much to you. And even in those moments where they have that little bit of a success, it doesn't last. They get overconfident with it and it always gets rammed back in their face.
Yeah, we also got the first goal as well. We didn't even mention that it got the Mateta oh yes treatment. Same commentator as Zaha oh yes. Same line. He needs to make it, uses it once every 9 years or whatever it is.
I think as well, talking about the rivalry, whenever there's a game that actually matters, it's always Palace against that lot. You know, we haven't played him for ages, beaten 5-0, first game of the Amex, beat them, playoff, beat them. Game where they had like 134 shots to 2, beat them. So it's like, it's funny that they can, you know, we take the piss out of them for the XG and the possession and all that, but it's like, guys, you've got to try and score a goal. You've got to try and, you know, every now and again, when it matters, do something. But I think the only thing, this is not a downer, but could you imagine the carnage at the Amex when Benteke's goal goes in at the away end as well? Not to like sour it a bit, but that's
not soured it at all. I thought you were going to say, no. Can you imagine if we hadn't have won, it would have been, because let's face it, we're all thinking that as well.
Yeah, we were, and there's reasons for that as well, which unfortunately we will have to get into some bit. You've had a good 30 odd minutes of us being euphoric and laughing and enjoying the moment, but we do have to talk a little bit about the game in itself as well, but we won't dwell on it too long. So I suppose one thing we got, and again, there's some positives to talk about here, because if you look at the lineup selection, you look at the formation, you look at the system, you know, Terence, you were talking about it beforehand, that Roy really did, and the coaching staff as well, obviously did actually do what we've been crying out for a lot, which is, you know, look at the players available, look at the opposition, and really try and come up with the best way of dealing with the situation. We knew Brighton were going to have a lot of possession anyway. So, we did get that extra body in midfield that we've missed a lot. And we did, you know, sacrifice the sort of attacking side of the game and try to play on the break. And you could say it worked, you know, and I do have some thoughts about whether or not that was down to the system and down to, you know, certainly the players' effort was fantastic. The defending at times heroic, but we, you know, we rode our luck and they were very wasteful with finishing at times as well. But, you know, it was pleasing to see Roy change something and try things a little bit differently, right?
Yeah, that's true. I think that it's also worth pointing out that it was clear from that game that he hasn't lost the dressing room, which is the way the players played for him and threw their bodies on the line. And Cahill touched on it a lot about after the game, talking about we're getting back to basics a bit on defending and making sure we're doing the fundamentals right. And, you know, it's a big game for the fans, so you put your body on the line. But in terms of the formation, when we lined up, I thought, oh, this is gonna be a 4-3-3, and it's gonna be a little bit like we're gonna have a go. Very quickly became, this is a very flat 4-5-1, which I understand why he's done it, but I don't understand why he just sacrificed Eze's whole entire game playing him along just as a third defensive midfielder, because that's what they all were. They were all sat very, very deep. And it wasn't until halfway through, maybe even later than that, in the second half, where Eze even had a single chance to run and they just hacked him down immediately. So it was a shame to see him just wasted in that position. And it showed how completely negative our approach was in his mind. And yeah, but at least he's attempted to tactically change something based on the opponent, which we haven't seen much of in the last year.
Absolutely right. And, you know, I tweeted during the game, and I even said, you know, if we end up winning this, I'll gloat, I'll enjoy it, I'll celebrate, but there'll still be something in the back of my mind that was really, really fucked off with how bad we were, you know, and we were really, really bad. There's no two ways about it.
Well, I absolutely took one for the team I never tagged Parrish in a tweet, and I'd finally got to the stage where I tagged Parrish in a tweet and said something along the lines of, you know, how much more of this do we have to put up with? We've had 3 shots to their 44. Across the 2 games, how much longer do we have to put up with this? Like, literally, as Ben White swiped it in the air. Well, what's ridiculous and how much it like struck on the thing? It got nearly 200 likes before Benteke put the ball in the back of the net.
Wow,
which is ridiculous. So it shows how much on the money it was. But then we all were backtracking very quickly.
Was one of them from Steve Parrish?
No, I did also say after this sentiment still stands.
We were, yeah, you can't never back down, Terence.
There was nothing to back down from. We'll talk about the stats shortly.
Yeah, we will. Well, I mean, look, you know, it's no doubt about it. Before that goal goes in, Twitter was toxic. It was, you know, it was toxic till we scored in the first half when they equalised, and when we were getting an absolute battering, you know, and it seemed like only a matter of time before Brighton scored, and we did, you know, we did nothing. And even the substitution, where the only change we made to try and change the game was to go like for like, striker for striker, and as it turned out, you know, Hodgson looks like a genius, but you know, I think you can see by his reaction he didn't expect Benteke to do that, because I think that's the first time I've visibly seen Roy Hodgson swear with delight. But I mean, look, there was a few little things as well in the selection, and I want to get your views, Hesketh, on Wardy starting over Klein. You know, kind of how did you feel initially thinking that? Because, you know, I always feel like Klein's the better right back, but Wardy had a tremendous game, and we've already praised him at the top of the show.
Yeah, I think he did have a good game. It's, you know, when we've talked about Ward and Klein in the past this season, it's been, I guess, centred around Klein's a bit more forward thinking, a bit more attacking. But for me, I guess, I mean, in hindsight, because Wardy had a good game, I'm fine with Ward playing. If I'd have known that his record against Brighton was as good as it was, I'd have been absolutely delighted, to be honest. But he played very well. I think maybe it does go back to perhaps Roy was thinking to be a bit more solid. So we had Mitchell on the left as well. I'm not sure. But yeah, I think the defence certainly should be applauded, goalie as well, because they were all excellent. It was bodies on the line, you know, the amount of diving and sliding that was done was brilliant. And you know, I felt sorry for Mitchell on the Brighton goal, because he actually made a really good tackle on, I think it was Welbeck, but because their bloke had sort of run behind Andros, who hadn't bothered going with him, you know, it was punished. But yeah, I think defensively, you know, I've been a bit critical of Cahill in recent weeks, but I thought he was excellent. I thought Chiari, especially in the first half, Cahill, especially in the second half, were both very, very good. So as poor as the overall performance was and as non-existent as the midfield was, I think defensively they should all be applauded, you know, massively.
Well, but what do you think the difference was at the back there? I mean, Chiari and Cahill, you know, were excellent. Chiari's been sort of rested out of the team recently, only just got back in. Probably did need a rest, in all fairness. But Cahill, probably up until the Brighton game, where, you know, he really put himself on the line repeatedly, took a, you know, massive whack to the face, was, you know, throwing his body at everything. And he had a tremendous game, despite looking like he was, you know, finished almost at this level. What do you think was behind that defensive improvement?
It's hard to say, because we've been so utterly soft from set pieces and all sorts of scenarios over the last few games. So, I mean, other than just sheer determination, that's all I can put it down to, really. You know, it's Cahill acknowledged it was a big game for the fans, even if the team don't necessarily feel that as a rivalry. You know, Brighton were a bit wasteful. You know, but that doesn't take away from the fact that there were, you know, decent saves and decent blocks going in. And, you know, listen, I can't sit here and say, you know, we've already alluded, it wasn't a great overall performance, certainly in the attacking sense. But sometimes when you just, you know, dig deep and defend, you know, it can be your day. And, you know, I'd have taken a point out of that game probably before kickoff. I'd have taken a point at 88 minutes. I'd have taken a point at 89 minutes. You know, we're incredibly, incredibly fortunate to come away with the 3 points, as good as those goals are. The rest of the performance was severely lacking, but you can't fault the determination and grit that we showed at the back. And I think that's ultimately what kept us in the game, even for a point, let alone three.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up as well, because that goes back to the whole point we've been talking about, which is, you know, the banner went up, didn't it, with the HF saying, you know, the lack of ambition, the lack of desire, you know, that kind of stuff. But I thought that the performance against Brighton showed that that lack of ambition and desire isn't with the players. They have that within them to give that level of commitment and that level of performance. So perhaps does it maybe point to that the lack of ambition being with the manager, which is what we've been talking about a lot. And I would say this, you look at that game, and it's very easy to say tactically we played it exactly right. We hit him on the break. We soaked up pressure. What a fantastic managerial display that was. But I think it's equally valid to say that wasn't the only way for this squad to win that game. We didn't have to expect people to put bodies on the line, be absolute heroes defending and barely attack to win that football match. Just so happens that's how we did. So I think there's a point to consider there. But I mean, Terence, I don't know if you want to take us quickly through the stats that you wanted to get into.
Well, I mean, that's, yeah, and actually a great segue into it, because across the two games, we've effectively treated Brighton like their Barcelona from 2009 is what we've done, because in that game alone, 25 attempts versus our three, their expected goals, 2.5 versus our 0.2, 52
just 10
touches.
Times more goals than us.
Yeah, 52 touches in our penalty area. A game is only 90 minutes long. They were in our penalty area touching the ball more, like pretty much every other minute in the game, less than every other minute in the game. That's ludicrous. I joked on Twitter that we should have been charging them rent for living in our penalty area. 75% possession and 13 corners to our big whopping zero. We couldn't even muster a corner.
Didn't need them.
Then, and you go back to, you know, two touches in the penalty area. It's we've had worse this season at Anfield. Or was that back end of last season? I can't remember. All these seasons seem to blend into one at the moment. But with the Andros Townsend touching it just right on the corner of the area in the first 30 seconds of the game, and then we didn't touch it again. So yeah, this isn't new. But you understand it a little bit more against Liverpool than you do against Brighton. And then when you look at the two games as an aggregate, obviously, the stat that matters is that we scored three and they scored two, and we've taken 4 points this season. But four shots versus 45, 29% possession versus 71, 524 completed passes versus 1,254 completed passes. And at least in the home game, we managed a few more touches in the box. We totaled 9 across the two games versus their 89. So across the two games, they did have the ball in our area every other minute, which is just, it's laughable. It's not, we're not playing Barcelona. We're not playing Manchester City. It's Brighton and they're our rivals. And it's the game that matters most to the fans. And we need to be doing more to beat them. As I say, with a smile on my face, because obviously we did beat them, but the approach is wrong.
Yeah, for sure. So I've only got a couple of bits left. I just want to go through each of you and just, you know, give a shout out to who you thought were the best performers and your man of the match. I'll start with you, Albert. I'm going to go the other way this time. So who would you pick out as the outstanding player for you, or any performances of note?
Who was the fella that went dizzy to lose Benteke?
Dan Burns.
Yeah, that guy.
Actually, he probably was. Yeah, I'll give you that. How about you, Hesketh?
Should have been sent off, incidentally. I know that the ref let him off because he was trying to keep the play up to speed, but he handballed it when he was on a yellow card very deliberately just after we scored. And that should have been a second yellow. Just, you know, we want them to go down, so we want them to lose their players for upcoming
games. Yeah, although, no, frankly, I don't. I'm not sure.
I like getting 4 points out of a team. Keep them up, I say.
But I just, I saw that handball. Well, I almost think he'd do more damage playing at left back for them for the rest of the season than being out, to be honest. Very odd player, I have to say. But go on, Hesketh, anyone you want to pick out?
I thought Ayew had a very good game. I know it's weird, I guess, for a forward player, because we barely got the ball forward, but he put a lot of work in. And his run, you know, in the build-up to the second goal, and he got the assist on the first hit, and he showed that, you know, he made it count when he did get the ball. So, as you could pick any of the defenders, and I'd say, yeah, I agree. But I think a little shout out to Ayew, because I think he worked his socks off and helped us get the win massively.
Frankly, you could almost praise him as one of the outstanding defenders as well, with the amount of work he did, you know, almost back in his own box. He was superb. Like I say, the most pleasing thing for me was how much he was still running at the end to get us that goal in the 95th minute with his sort of pace and power again there. So, Terence, how about yourself?
Yeah, Jordan Ayew was man of the match for me. By a lot, assisted the first goal, played a massive part in the second, did not stop running, tackles, interceptions, the lot. You can make an argument for Cahill, especially on his second half performance. And not much said about Vinny Guaita. He made a triple save in that point. It's because it isn't like, you know, full stretch tippy kind of saves. Like, they were all blocks and it was all a bit messy and you couldn't even make out who was blocking it. That triple save was unbelievable. So a shout out to him as well. But I just think Jordan Ayew put a shift in so much defensively, and the two times we got forward, he made it count.
Yeah. So I'll just, end this part by talking about the fact that, I mean, Albert touched on it earlier, how good it would have been to have been in the stadium to be celebrating that. And, you know, I would have been there and I would have absolutely loved that moment. It would have been up there with the celebrations from the 3-1 at the Amex, where I lost my mind completely and was bundled over and crushed and missed the third goal and all that stuff, which are the moments that really stick out in your mind when you think about how much you miss football at the moment and how you miss going to games. You know, I miss that just the insanity of a last minute winner and at an away ground at your hated rivals, and how much we would have had to, you know, we'd been running around Brighton City Centre gloating, all that kind of stuff. So I miss that. But it still felt like something that I think we all needed as a fan base. We haven't had those moments, and that's why we have got a bit toxic at times, and that's why people have got on to Hodgson, because, you know, we've got the whole thing about lockdown, not going to games, but also even watching it on TV, it's been so little to inspire us. And even though it wasn't an inspiring performance, when you beat your rivals with the last kick of the game, that's inspiring. That's what we're all in it for, if you like, really. You know, all of us, no matter what we say about, you know, how fed up we are with things, moments like that will change everything. And we don't want them every week. We're not greedy, but we just want a chance of that sometimes. And, you know, if it keeps happening, I will change my mind on Roy, and I'll want him for another season if we can keep giving ourselves moments of joy like that. But they've been too few and far between, I think. But we've got to enjoy this one. So I'll leave it there and we can head into the preview.
Well, yeah, I mean, we'll do a brisk preview this week. I won't mention that I think we've got enough of a cushion now to let Fulham win to drag Brighton into it even more. Probably shouldn't go there. It's probably not that much of a cushion, is it? But of course, it shows how massive the Brighton result was. You know, we would have only been, what we currently know, it would have been 7 points ahead of Fulham going into the game on the weekend had we lost that game. And then obviously a defeat would have led it to being 4 points behind them and really getting dragged into it. So it shows a huge result against Brighton and takes a bit of the pressure off of us in this one, should the results have gone a bit poor against our rivals. But going into the game, still injury list as long as our arm. I can't imagine that Will's going to be back at this juncture. Probably still another, maybe one or two games for him. Kearney's out for them, which is obviously a big loss. And Mitrovic, doubtful with COVID. Broke the COVID rules earlier in the year, didn't get COVID, but now it's finally caught up with him. So what stats are we getting this week? So unfortunately, we haven't gained any more strengths yet, although it is now saying we're likely to score from wing play situations after scoring two crosses on the weekend. So that's good. But interesting one here. And it's a weird kind of mix. So Fulham have failed to win 28 of their last 31 away matches, which is ridiculous in Premier League football. But Hesketh, they're unbeaten in their last six, but five of those are draws. So kind of a mixed bag there.
Mm. Yeah, they've been all right lately. I mean, I thought they'd won more, I suppose, than they have. But they definitely look like they've learned quite a bit about the league and how to play in it from the early few games, where they looked all right going forward, but their defence was absolutely awful. I mean, the game where we played them away, I know it ended 2-1, but I thought we were much better than them. And they had a couple of chances, but I didn't even really think we got out of gear. So they've improved a lot, and their form at the moment's looking all right. But like we've spoken about with that Brant game, we just need to be better with the ball. I don't think we can carry on giving the ball away to opposition teams and thinking that we're going to get out of it in the way that we did against Brighton. And with players like, you know, Lookman and Loftus-Cheek seemingly in good form.
How we had never looked at Lookman, I don't understand.
I think they're a better team than we would normally expect them to be. So it'll be a good game, I think. But yeah, we just need to be better holding the ball.
Yeah, absolutely. And it'll be interesting to see how we approach this Hambo, because we've got a team who's in form, but we've also been particularly good at beating newly promoted teams under Hodgson, and this season more notably picking up points against teams below us. So you've got to see that Roy is going to not see this as a game where we should sit back, and we'll actually try and go to win it, I'd imagine.
Well, yeah, you'd certainly hope so, because we have been a bit more open and expansive against those teams, and that's why we've beaten them. We've had a little bit of a shift in that sense, haven't we, in the sense that we used to probably be a bit too respectful of them, but our style would work better against top six teams, and we'd kind of almost pick up the points that way. Whereas we've very much kind of surrendered to top six mostly, but we've just had that shift in style, the 4-4-2, being that tiny bit more open and not worrying quite so much about their strengths. It has kind of worked for us this season at times, and it's why we've got 32 points on the board. But I worry with the players that we've got available that Hodgson will go with that same approach against Brighton. And I think that would be a big mistake, because I do think Fulham are there, you know, really fighting. That's what's been behind their improvement in their form. It got desperate. They kind of got to that point where they had to do something about it. They had to change what they were doing because the approach they had wasn't working. So they've had to take a few more risks. If you go back to when we beat them previously, they weren't bad against us. You know, they probably should have scored before we did, I think. So can't sure I'm remembering the game exactly right. But you know, they weren't terrible against us, but they had problems at the back, didn't they? They weren't clinical enough, and they were quite easy to get through and score. I think they have shifted that now. It's slightly harder to score against them, and they're that little bit more dangerous. So I think we'd be wrong to focus too much on their strengths, but I think naturally with the team available, I think that's where Roy will go, and I think it's going to be a tough game.
Yeah, absolutely. I think Loftus-Cheek has finally got fit and he's playing consistently. Lookman's finally settled in after his penalty mishaps where he did the Panenka penalty and missed and stuff like that. But adding Majerin is actually, you know, a bit more pace to that front line. So look a lot more dynamic going forward. And they've been a decent team, and a lot of the draws have been, you know, they've had a lot of draws where they could have easily turned them to wins with that extra bit of know-how and whatever. But, you know, they're slowly starting to tick those over, and they've been playing some good stuff. I mean, well, with Roy out of contract at the end of the season, I wouldn't be too miffed if Scott Parker's name got thrown into the hat for it, to be honest, with the style of football he's got on playing. But and as we say, the difference between now and then, he's clearly learning on the job, because he's getting them playing much better stuff. He's adapting, and he's you know, making them look like a team that people are actually looking over their shoulders at and getting concerned about. I saw one Palace tweet taking it from Oldham all the way down to Ham and then building it up to Fulham. Yeah. It's insane. That might be what happens to us in a relegation sense. But as I say, I think we've put those fears to bed now. But Albert, what do you think he's going to do? Do you share Hambo's fears that it'll stick with a 4-5-1, or do you think that, you know, given that Mateta is a bit more wants to play off your shoulder, we could see a 4-4-2 with Benteke and Mateta up top and see how that works?
Well, yeah, I mean, you couldn't blame Roy for trying it. You know, as we've talked about, they're the last two strikers to score in the same game for however many years it's been that Heskey's been married. So you it wouldn't be the greatest stretch of imagination for those two to start. And you know, maybe there is something there in a 4-4-2 with, you know, two big guys up front that can maybe take advantage of a defence that, you know, has traditionally been quite soft, but they've only conceded one goal in their last four games. So it's kind of, it's always going to be, I mean, Roy's kind of keeping us on our toes the last few games, you know, he PVA out wide, et cetera, and, you know, he has tried to mix it up as much as Roy Hodgson can with the squad available. So all bets are off. We're off this massive elation of absolutely undeservedly beating Brighton, and then going into a game against a team that we have done fairly well against in recent fixtures. But yeah, listen, they're picking up a bit of form, and they're playing some, you know, half decent football with some half decent players. So, you know, I can't say I'm steaming into it full of confidence based on the performance at Brighton. The result was great. The performance wasn't. I'd love to take a decent performance, a clearly decent performance with a boring 1-0 win, just to sort of settle the nerves down. But something tells me it's going to be a bit more complicated than that.
Go on then. You might as well finish it off there with your prediction.
I think I'm going to go for a 1-1.
Oh, cool. Heskett, you're constantly stealing Heskett's predictions.
He is. I was going to go 1-1. I'm going to go 1-1 as well. I can't see any other result.
And Hambo, you listen in and know how useless we are at this, so show us how it's done.
Look, I'm going to go positive and regret it. So I'm actually going to go a 2-0 Palace win with a decent performance.
Yeah,
I love the addition of that with a decent performance. Yeah. I mean, you've really gone balls out there. Yeah. Hashtag Manscaped.
It'll be interesting to see what he does. I think, like, if we play, I'd like to see us go back to a 4-4-2 for this and just actually have a go at him. And if he does that and he's brave, we've been good at putting teams below us to the sword. So I'll optimistically go 2-1 and just think because we never signed Jos Madjo when we really wanted to, he'll probably pop up and score against us. But I'll go with a 2-1 and we can keep the good mood party bus rolling on. And you know, as we talked about last week, Roy will be helping us help him get to the end of the season where we can all part ways in a happy fashion. And pat him on the back and send him off into Croydon with his head held high. So I think next week, so we've got a weekend game, Hambo. So the match report will be a normal match report on a weekend.
Yeah, it will be. Yeah. Well, we play Sunday at 12, don't we? So yeah, I might be doing it on the Sunday night, might be on the Monday, but it will you know, be fairly regular. You'll get to do the preview without me next week, which will be, I'm sure will be nice.
Devastating.
You've got these guys, Albert and Heskiff. They're great. They're two of my favourite guys from the preview show.
Well, guys, so listen out for the match report on the weekend, or Monday if it slips into that, or not. Yeah. You know, just preview pod strong. Come, just make sure you join us next week amongst anything else. And yeah, all that's left to say is, as always, make sure you head over to manscaped.com. Use the code BOTN on all your products. Get 20% off and free shipping. And Heskiff and Albert, I will see you next week for the preview of the next game.
The next game.
Which is against Manchester United.
A football team for Manchester United.
Yes, but that says my spider senses tell me that that's a Wednesday. So that is the night we're supposed to do the preview.
Oh.
Let's not. We could do a very quick one just before kickoff. Oh, no, it's 4-4-2.
Well, we should just get you and your Manchester United supporting wife to do the wash along.
That is a great show.
That is a
show.
Hey, that's not. Yeah. Fucking live bundle. I think on certain places of the internet, you can get good money for that.
Hashtag OnlyFans.
Yeah. Well, look at the socials. Our socials will tell you when things are happening, but we'll figure something out. But yes, enjoy it. It wasn't the best performance, but it was an amazing win. So enjoy it. Hopefully we can follow it up at Fulham on the weekend with another 3 points. So until the next time, up the Palace.
It's the 90th minute. All your mates are round. You've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Your mates already got booked for double dipping and you steal the last nugget, snatching all 3 points. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in? At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.